We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is the home of the U, Miami's Sports Radio 560 WQAM. Welcome to Hurricanes Weekly, where we talk all things Canes every Sunday morning. Today's show is presented by Williamson Cadillac Buick GMC. Miami's premier luxury dealership is Williamson Cadillac Buick GMC. Visit WilliamsonAutomotiveGroup.com. Now, the voice of the U, Joe Zagacki.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Hurricanes Weekly on this Sunday, February the 17th, 2019. We come to you from Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts, as the University of Miami basketball team will take on Boston College later today. Tip-off is at 6 o'clock. We'll be on the air at 5:30 for the Hurricanes and Boston College, two teams struggling. Miami coming off a last-second win this past Wednesday against Clemson. Miami now 3-9 in conference play, 11-13 overall. Boston College 3-8 in conference play, 12-11 overall. Baseball team in action this afternoon, 12 o'clock against Rutgers at Alex Rodriguez Park and Mark Lay Field. And the University of Miami women's basketball team with a huge matchup this afternoon at 3 o'clock, taking on number 2 Louisville. Hurricanes on the road. Louisville is 23-1 overall, 10-1 in conference play. Miami is 9-2 in conference play, 21-5 overall. A victory today by Miami would move them into the lead in the ACC. So the division lead is up for grabs today at the Yum Center. Miami and Louisville, 3 o'clock tip-off. And joining us on the show right now is Hurricanes head coach Keeney Meyer.
You've had such a week and a day. I don't even know where to start. Notre Dame, the scholarship gift, beating Pittsburgh, ranked number 20. Your choice.
Well, I mean, I think the gift and the impact and the how long that's going to last, I think it's just amazing. It's just so humbling. And, you know, we've been trying to build a program here that is elite in terms of, you know, the support, you know, not just the effort on the court, but, you know, the most thing I'm proud of is that every player I've ever coached at Miami that stayed 4 years has graduated. That's the number one thing. I want that to be my legacy. But for sure, when the donors see what we're trying to do and they want to step up and join in that kind of that mission, you know, that vision, I think that's just huge. So that's got to be the biggest thing that's happened this week for sure.
We should explain to our audience that the University of Miami received a seven-figure gift to endow a scholarship, and it came from one of your great followers, one of your great backers, who's there all the time, and BJ Bolt, and a seven-figure estate gift to establish a women's basketball scholarship endowment named after Keeney Meyer.
Yeah, that last part, that gets you right in the throat there a little bit. I mean, I want it for the school. I want it for the university. I want it for the athletic department. I want it for my kids. But the fact that she put my name on it was something I wasn't expecting. So, yeah, I got real emotional. I mean, I was very emotional and very, I still am about it. I mean, I just can't believe it. And I want to do whatever I can to impact lives, and BJ gets that, and she just thought that it was the appropriate thing to do, and it's just very humbling, very humbling.
Now let's go back a couple of days. Thursday night, great night at the Watsco Center, one of the best nights. Your team played brilliantly from start to finish, and you beat the defending champs.
We did, you know, and it wasn't one of those things where when we beat them, you know, I can't remember what year, but it was a couple years ago, when we beat them at home, it was kind of shocking. It was like, oh my God, and we were up 20 at halftime, and they were very, very good, and you know, we were trying to get some attention for this program, and it was shocking. I remember being stunned. This time beating them was more like I went into the game pretty confident. We took care of the ball. We could stop the transition. I felt really good about it. I like our talent. I like our team. We were a tough matchup for them. You know, they had some problems preparing for us instead of us just worrying about how to slow them down. So I felt good about it. But, you know, as the game was playing out, it was just it could have gone either way. But we held. You know, we just never broke, and we just held. And I thought we were leading for almost 33 minutes of the 40 minutes of the game. So I think we deserved it. It wasn't a shock.
Did you have fun?
Yes, I did. I really did. But it was there was a lot of it was a very cerebral game. I don't know how else to say it. There were a lot of decisions to make, and there were a lot of, you know, Notre Dame, which they don't normally do. They had to change their defense, and that caught me a little bit off guard in the game, and I just kind of had to. Sometimes I'm jawing at the refs or whatever, but I didn't have any time to do anything except, you know, what are they in? What do we need to do? You know, I just kept trying to find our matchups that, based on whatever defense they were in. So compliment to, I think, Emesa and Beatrice that Notre Dame had to change what they normally do to try to stop those two, but they just couldn't stop them. I mean, yeah. Emesa Haas and Beatrice Montpremier were amazing.
I was going to say, I think you really frustrated them because they could not stop you.
No, and you know, they're a great team, and they they usually play a zone, and you don't think that, you know, normally you play a zone to stop the bigs from scoring, but that's how high level I think Emesa for sure is in terms of her passing. And then Beatrice has really understood the value of the pass in the last couple of games. And so when you have those two bigs that are sharing the ball, you can beat a zone. You know, you can go inside out against the zone, and then why are you playing a zone? You know, I mean, I think that kind of happened in Notre Dame. They tried to, well, I guess we should try man-to-man now, and that took me a little bit off my game plan because I wasn't expecting it.
You've got a week off here. I want to get into this Louisville game that you have coming up, but also this past week you beat Pittsburgh. Don Shula used to say that after a big win, if you're going to make that win meaningful, you better win the next game, and you did that.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, good teams respond after a loss. You know, you have a good team. You have a good culture. And you lost, like we lost at Florida State. We were mad about it, and we came back. And, you know, we go on a little winning streak. So that's a good team. But great teams have to respond to a win. That's harder sometimes. I mean, when, you know, you start – I mean, I said to the team on Friday morning, yeah, you guys enjoyed it last night? Yeah. Did you read Twitter? Oh, yeah. Did you watch the news? Yeah. I read the newspaper? Yeah, great. You want to know how many more tweets there'll be on Sunday if you lose at Pitt? Like, you'll get a heck of a lot more of attention than you're getting tonight, but it won't be. I bet you won't be on Twitter. I bet you won't be on Instagram. And I tried to get their attention that way because it was a heck of a trap game. And I wrote my upperclassmen on the side chat, just saying, guys, you need to take care of this. You know, this one's a locker room win. This is one of those deals where I'm going to put a game plan together. Coach Blue did a great job with the scout and everything else, but you know, there's going to be stuff being said in the locker room when the coaches aren't around. And you got to jump it. Like if someone says, well, it's Pitt and they haven't won an ACC game and we're going to go up there and, you know, I'm not as fired up or whatever. Like that's got to be stopped in the locker room and I'm not there. So you got to take care of this. And I really feel like they did.
You have a kind of a bye week, but the next game up on Sunday is Louisville. At Louisville, they are 22-1. Their only loss is to Notre Dame. Asia Durr is averaging 20 points a game. What a great opportunity again for your team.
Yeah, what a week here, right? Yep. I mean, my God, and that's life in the ACC. But what's so fun is, you know, I really thought we were going to be very good, and you know, you have conversations with, you know, at ACC meetings with the conference office or ESPN, and you kind of fight for, hey, listen, you know, we're going to be one of those top 5, 3, 4 teams in the ACC. We're going to be really good, and you know, you ought to put us on, and you ought to make sure, you know, you kind of have to, you know, push it a little bit when you're in women's basketball, like well, you're going to be a big game. And, you know, they picked this game for the KL, the pink game. And it's, you know, the nation's going to be watching. And they, because here it is, you know, I mean, we're 20 and they're going to be one or two in either one of the polls. We're going to be 20 or 15, 18, something like that. And both of us have a week off. So it's a big, big time basketball game. And I do believe they are one or two, like they earn that ranking. They are one of the best, if not the best team in the country. And there'll be over 10,000, 12,000 fans in their arena. And they've been selling out left and right. So here we are. You know, we created this opportunity for ourselves. And how fun is that?
Unbelievable. How good is Asia Durr?
She's so good that, you know, but she's so unselfish. So she's just, and I'm watching our game from last year, and, you know, we sometimes you get excited as a coach and you go, okay, well, we're going to stop Asia. But Asia's like, okay, but Louisville's still going to beat you. Like, I mean, she's got that mentality. It doesn't matter. I mean, she can score. She can score 8 points in 10 seconds, and you're just like, oh, my God. But at the same time, she just makes sure Louisville wins. And so she has my utmost respect. She is very, very talented, very, you know, heralded, very, you know, she's got a lot of pressure on her and everything else. But, oh, my God, at the end of the day, you know, her resume, she only cares about, you know, the win column for her team. She's a very team-oriented player.
I hope I articulate this the right way, but I looked this up today and wrote something today in regards to what you've done at the University of Miami. I don't know if people understand where you started at the University of Miami. The first 4 years were building and tough.
Not great.
Yeah, but you knew what you wanted to achieve. And I wrote that where you are today competing at the highest level, in order to do that, you had to be here. And so there was some time and patience involved, maybe on your part, patience, but there was some time involved. And after those 4 years, what you've done the last 9 years, people have to look at it. It's incredible. 9-20 win seasons. You're going to be in the NCAA tournament, I think, now for the fifth straight year. You have established something very special. But in order to do it, you had to be here. You had to survive the first couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah, I try to, when there's a new coach that comes to Miami, and, you know, I really try to sort of make sure I spend some time with them, and I kind of tell my story. Like, it's harder than you think, but it's going to grind you down. But it grinds you down to, like, a very, very authentic version of yourself, and the best you will emerge. I mean, the best you is going to emerge, and if you were going to make it somewhere, anywhere, if you make it at Miami, you know, if you've gone through some hard times at Miami and you come out of that, you should be one of the most confident coaches in the country. And I am. I truly am. I really believe in what we're doing, and I really believe in this place, and I really believe that my staff is great, my players are great, and I believe we can win every game we're in. And the reason why I believe that so much is because I've been at the bottom. You know, I've been at the bottom here staring up going, you know, what's it going to take? And no one can take that journey away from you. It just, once you get through it, you're like, all right, well, I can handle anything, and so let's go. And so everything's fun and an opportunity instead of something that you get stressed about or scared of.
And you have brought Miami to where you are today, where you are recognized now, Miami's program, basketball program. You are recognized as one of the mainstays in college basketball now.
You know, they're just doing a reveal right now. I'm watching the UConn, and they have us as a 4 seed today. I'm watching South Carolina UConn at the halftime. They did the 16, the top hosts, and I'm literally just watching us as a 4 seed in the Albany region. That's the NCAA saying, hey, Miami, you know what, you might host this thing. So that is big news, breaking news right now as I'm on the radio. That's awesome. That's awesome. And that's a huge journey for this particular team. If we can keep it up, we can, you know, finish out February and March solid and, you know, some top wins. That's really impressive for us. So that's great. You know, that's on ESPN right now as I'm watching.
Well, congratulations on the week you had. The very best of luck against Louisville. And you're gaining a lot of traction. The town is behind you, and we're going to watch this journey.
Okay, thanks. You guys have been awesome. I really appreciate the support.
All right, the very best of luck to Katie Meyer as they take on Louisville later today. Our show is brought to you by Williamson Cadillac. Williamson Cadillac has been a part of Miami's unique community for over 50 years. Later today, Miami and Boston College will be on the air at 5:30. When we come back, we'll talk with Hurricanes head coach Jim Larrañaga as we continue on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
Radio.com. This is Hurricanes Weekly, presented by Williamson Cadillac Buick GMC on the home of the U, Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
Happy to welcome you back to Hurricanes Weekly, Sunday, February the 17th, 2019. Our show brought to you in part by Williamson Cadillac right now. You can experience the new generation of Cadillac, like the new 2019 Cadillac Escalade XT5 CT6 and the first ever 2019 Cadillac XT4. This afternoon, the Hurricanes, or later this evening, will take on Boston College at the Connie Forum. Canes have to keep a close eye on Kai Bowman. Bowman averaging 20 points per game, the leading scorer for Boston College, also nearly 8 rebounds a game and shooting 80% from the free throw line. One of the top players in the ACC will be on the air at 5:30 for Miami and Boston College. Joining us now to preview the game and to discuss many other things is Hurricanes head coach Jim Larrañaga.
You went up in your career, you've gone up against some pretty good players, Hall of Famers, some of the all-time greats. One of those guys was Julius Erving.
When I was at Providence College playing for Dave Gavin, who was a Hall of Fame basketball coach, he was our 1980 Olympic coach, and he's also the founder of the Big East Conference. He was my college coach, and in the first game of my junior year, we played at the University of Massachusetts, and they had a player I'd never heard of before, and no one else had either. His name was Julius Erving. And that night he had 27 points and 28 rebounds. He was unbelievable. And I thought to myself, he'll never have a game like that again. And instead, he had games like that all the time. And became Dr. J and one of the Hall of Fame players from the NBA and ABA days, and just a great player and a great ambassador for the game of basketball, and a very, very nice guy.
Now, when Dr. J and you played college, there was no dunking, and he was known for his dunking ability.
Yeah, he's the best layup maker I ever played against, because even when he couldn't dunk, he would finger roll it right at the rim, high off the backboard. He had such an assortment of running one-handers, and he converted that when he played in pro ball into dunks. He had huge hands. A basketball was like almost like a softball in his hand.
You know, I bring him up the other night. I was watching, I mentioned this to you, the Duke game, and Hubie Brown said Zion Williamson reminds him of George McGinnis. And McGinnis and Dr. J, of course, ended up playing together. And I don't know if Zion Williamson is going to be George McGinnis or not. McGinnis was a hell of a player. You also went up against some of those great UCLA teams. And did you face off against Jabbar? Did you go up against Jabbar?
Yeah.
He was Al Cinder at the time.
Yeah. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was a senior at UCLA my sophomore year in college. I had watched Lou Alcindor play in high school against my high school team. Some of the greatest performances I've ever witnessed. Kareem had in the high school, the CHSAA championship game, the city championship, he had 19 points in the first quarter. In the first quarter, and just was unstoppable. He led Powell Memorial to the city championship. I think it was 3 or 4 years in a row, at least 3, maybe 4. And then in college, he led UCLA to those 3 consecutive championships. And in his senior year, UCLA came to New York to showcase Lou Alcindor's talents in his hometown of New York City. We played him in Madison Square Garden in what it was called the New York Holiday Festival at Christmas time. A terrific game. I scored 17 points. My teammate Vic Colucci scored 36. We ended up losing to him. I think it was like 98-81. But it was close at halftime, and we played pretty good. And Kareem, I think, had 30 points. We had nobody that could come close to guarding him.
And during those days, he was still, he was mastering at that point, starting to master his skyhook.
Oh, yeah, the skyhook was unstoppable. And, yeah, by that time in his career, he already had the skyhook. And that was one of the things. When Lou Alcindor was a freshman, In his first game as a freshman, it was against UCLA varsity that had won the national championship. He scored 56 points and was dunking it half the time. So the NCAA outlawed the dunk, and he had to start working on and perfecting his hook shot. And the sky hook is now what everybody knows Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for. He is still the leading scorer in NBA history. I can't remember how many points it is, but he played until he was like 42 years old.
Well, he was always in good shape, and of course the sky hook. Maybe it kept him away from too much contact, but he was an incredible athlete. A couple years ago, we were having dinner before the Boston College game, and Doc Rivers came in, and he talked to the team. And on his way out, and the players started yelling at him, "Doc, Doc, Doc!" And he turned around and he said, I think his answer was Michael, because they were going to ask him, right? Remember that they were going to ask him who was better, Michael or LeBron, right? But you have to explain to the players that before Michael and LeBron, there was Jerry West.
There are two players in that generation that I followed. Well, there was more than two, but two players in particular. For me, growing up in New York City, my brother Bob was a recruited athlete and went to St. John's University when they were top 20 in the country. And one of my first experiences in watching my older brother play was going to Madison Square Garden and seeing Jerry West, who was at West Virginia, play against Ohio State, who had Jerry Lucas and John Havlicek. And Madison Square Garden, it was a doubleheader. It was an absolutely incredible crowd, a sellout in Madison Square Garden. And that was the old Garden, not the new Garden on 34th Street, but the old Garden, I think on 49th. Jerry West was just incredible. And so I became a big fan of his. I followed him throughout his career with the Los Angeles Lakers. I had certain basketball moves of my own that I basically was mimicking Jerry West. And then I had the great opportunity in college to work the Oscar Robertson basketball camp and actually match up with Oscar Robertson, who I was guarding, and Oscar Robertson might as well have been in the gym by himself. I was right with him, and he didn't even know I was there. He could do whatever he wanted to, take whatever shot, make whatever move, and then make it. And afterwards, I thought to myself, man, that guy is like not only everything everybody says he is, but even more. And that he was in his 30s when I matched up against him. He wasn't a young kid anymore. He wasn't like 25 years old. I was probably 20 or 21, and he was probably 32, 33, and playing for the Milwaukee Bucks and winning the world championship. So those two guys, you know, when people say, oh, different generation, they wouldn't do as good. No. Jerry West and Oscar Robertson were like the Michael Jordan, the James Harden, the LeBron James of their era, and they'd be doing the same thing now if they were young and playing in the NBA.
You just mentioned your brother Bob, and your brothers were really significant for your basketball career, right? And helped you, and basketball obviously became your life, but they're pretty significant for you to help you get going and because you were a good player.
Well, if it wasn't for my brother Bob and Greg, I never would have ended up being a basketball player or even a coach. When we grew up in the Bronx, there's six children in my family. And we lived in a small apartment in the Bronx, and everybody in the neighborhood played basketball. I had two older brothers and three sisters. And my brother Bob and Greg both played basketball, introduced me to the game of basketball. When I was in elementary school, I started following my basketball at the college level, and my brother Bob was playing at St. John's with, and the older fans listening to the show, my brother Bob was teammates with Kevin Lockery. And Kevin Lockery was the coach of the Miami Heat way back when.
That's right.
And Kevin Lockery and my brother Bob were teammates. I watched them play. And then when I was in the eighth grade and trying to decide what high school to go to, I was invited to try out for a basketball scholarship to Archbishop Molloy High School, which was in Queens, New York. And I ended up being offered a scholarship, and my father told me, no, I couldn't go there. And I said, why not? He said, well, all your brothers and sisters went to St. Helena's High School. You're going to St. Helena's. And my two brothers had to convince my father to let me go to Archbishop Molloy because of the high school coach, Coach Jack Curran. And eventually they convinced my father. I went to Archbishop Molloy. It took me an hour and a half by bus to get there every morning. I left my house at 6:45 a.m. I got to school at 8:15. I left Molloy about 7 p.m. after practice, got home about 8:30, 9 o'clock every night, and then made the trip all the time. But Mr. Curran became my mentor and my inspiration for wanting to coach.
Here's my 7 degrees of separation for you, Coach. I did Kevin Lockery. I did a TV show with Kevin Lockery.
You did a TV show with Kevin?
Yeah, with Kevin for 2 or 3 years, yes.
Well, I got to mention another gentleman who was very instrumental, who we won a championship together. I believe it's his first championship. I know it was my second. And his name is Brother Kevin.
Oh.
And Brother Kevin is a legend down here in Miami because of his leadership at Christopher Columbus High School.
Right.
But Brother Kevin was my JV coach when I was 14, 15 years old.
Holy smokes.
How about that?
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Wow. Is there a guy?
I just talked to Brother Kevin. I told him he needs to come to one of our home games and bring me some luck. We need to get a win.
Yeah. Before we wrap this segment up, is there a guy, a player, that you went up against maybe in college or as you during your career that really, really went on to have a fabulous career that you said, well, I played pretty good against him, or conversely, the guy that gave you the most trouble?
Well, it was the same guy because we matched up against each other. And I've told Chris Likes that Chris reminds me of him. And the player's name is Calvin Murphy. He played at Niagara and played in the NBA as a Hall of Fame player for the Houston Rockets, one of the leading free throw shooters, percentage free throw shooters in NBA history. The fastest little guy, he's about 5'9", and I matched up with him. I was a point guard at 6'5", and I tried to guard him, and I held him to 39 points. I scored 19, I believe, myself, and the one thing I tell everybody is it's probably the only game where I took more shots than Calvin Murphy. For me to get 19, I think I took 24 shots, and Calvin took like 19 shots to score 39 points. He went like 14 for 19, plus we fouled him a half a dozen times. So he was impossible, not only to try to guard, but he was such a nuisance defensively. I had a very hard time scoring on him.
The next game is Sunday at Boston College, and they can score the ball. Of course, they have the great guard play. They'll present a lot of problems trying to slow them down, right?
Well, Kai Bowman, to me, is the best point guard scorer rebounder maybe in the country. I know there's other guys who can score like him, but they don't rebound like him. There might be some guards who rebound like him, but they don't score like he does. But that combination of scoring and rebounding makes him a handful. And Boston College and Miami, like last year, the game was won or lost on the last shot, both games. And chances are it'll be that way this year. Two teams match up very well with each other. We battled very, very hard with them. Their head coach, Jim Christian, I've coached against him for years and years when he was at Kent State before he got to Boston College. So it should be a great matchup. And going to Boston, I normally would love to see my grandchildren because my son's with the Celtics, but it's All-Star break and they're going on vacation.
Last year you were you got ill before the game. Do you think, were you surprised that Bowman came back?
I really was. I thought for sure he'd be a first or second round draft pick, and he decided to come back. And I hope for him it was a good decision. Chances are he'll have a chance to come back. He's only a junior, so he could come back again, complete his senior year, get his degree, or maybe put his name in for the draft. Not sure what he'll do.
But he's a
really, really good player.
Yeah, he's really explosive. And they like to shoot the three. That's what Jim Christian likes to do, right? Spread you out a little bit and shoot the three ball.
Yeah, they shoot a lot of threes. I don't know if you saw the game the other day. They were playing Duke, and Ty Bowman got a rebound, dribbled out, and he just went to the basket and dunked it on him on a fast break with all those guys hustling to get back. He just dunked it right on them.
Yeah, I was going to say, sometimes you say for a guy like that, you got to stop the ball or stop him, but he just goes over the top of you.
Yeah, and, he's from North Carolina. So, I think when he plays North Carolina and Duke, he's fired up because neither one of them recruited him for basketball. I think North Carolina did recruit him for football.
Well, I can see why. I always ask you about tough times about the morale of your team, but you've done a good job keeping the morale up. And I thought when we got back the other night, you gave them a pretty good message about how they performed against North Carolina and what was coming up this week to keep their morale going.
Yeah, I told them, Joe, there's no moral victories, but I feel like we outplayed our opponent on Saturday. We out-rebounded them. We shot 100% from the foul line. We shot great from the field. We shot great from three-point range. We executed our game plan. I couldn't expect any more from our team. The only thing we didn't do is we didn't win because Carolina made that last shot. So I love our guys. I love the way they're competing. This has been a very rough season in terms of wins and losses, but we're trying to focus all of our attention on the second round of games. We have 7 games remaining for the regular season, and we'd really, really like to finish on a positive note.
Well, you did an unbelievable job on Saturday with your team, a game that I thought you won. I kind of chalk it up in my own mind as a victory. I'll take it as a moral victory. It was great theater. I hope we properly articulate to the audience what you were up against on Saturday, because it was a very, very unique situation. But you put together a game plan of the ages, and was one hell of a game.
All right, Joe. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks to Coach Yell for joining us here on the show. When we come back, we'll hear from Hurricanes head football coach Manny Diaz. Let me talk to you for a moment about Williamson Cadillac. Williamson Cadillac has been a part of Miami's unique community for over 50 years. And through those years, it's been their pleasure serving this community with the same essence that represents the people who live here, because Williamson is Miami. You can experience the new generation of Cadillac, like the new 2019 Cadillac Escalades, the XT5s, the CT6s, and the first ever 2019 Cadillac XT4 in stock and ready for delivery today. I'm driving the XT4. It is just an absolutely magnificent drive. You can visit the state-of-the-art, conveniently located facility for Williamson Cadillac, located at US 1 and 104th Street, just south of the Palmetto Expressway, or view their entire inventory online at WilliamsonCadillac.com. Williamson Cadillac, your premier luxury dealership. Williamson is Miami.
Radio.com. Radio. Radio. Turn up the radio. Radio.com. This is Hurricanes Weekly, presented by Williamson Cadillac Buick GMC on the home of the U, Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
Back on Hurricanes Weekly, brought to you in part by Williamson Cadillac. You can view their entire inventory online right now at WilliamsonCadillac.com. At 5:30 this afternoon, we'll have Hurricanes basketball taking on Boston College. We're coming to you from Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts. We'll be at the Connie Forum a little bit later on. 6 o'clock tip-off, Miami and Boston College. 3 o'clock today, Hurricanes women's team taking on Louisville from the Yum Center in Louisville. 12 o'clock first pitch, Miami and Rutgers in baseball. Coming up later this week for Hurricanes basketball, they'll be taking on Georgia Tech next Saturday at 2 o'clock. We'll have that one for you on WQAM. And the men, and baseball, will be at home on Wednesday, February the 20th, taking on FAU before they go on the road to play the Florida Gators Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Meanwhile, in football, last week, Manny Diaz joined us for part one of our conversation. We talk more about Hurricanes football right now. Don Bailey Jr. joining me, along with Hurricanes head football coach Manny Diaz.
Joe Zagacki and Don Bailey Jr. We're inside the University of Miami's practice facility, indoor practice facility, the Carol Sofer indoor practice facility, with University of Miami head coach Manny Diaz. And recruiting is done for now for this year. Of course, the future class, you're tracking those guys down. But what do you think about your roster now, where you are in terms of your skill set and those types of things, what you're going to have to work with when you begin spring football?
I know what our locker room thinks. Our locker room thinks we got a team that can compete for championships this year. They believe that. We had, when we brought recruits on our campus, and, you know, you sit down with them the next day and you'd ask them, say, how did you like our guys? What do you think about our current players? And I kept hearing, you got a hungry team in there, coach. You got a bunch of guys that are a little angry, a little ticked off from the way that last year ended, and there's a lot of hunger in there. So when you have guys like Shaq Quarterman, Mike Pinckney, Zach McLeod coming back, you know, that sets a tone for everybody. Now we're out here in the month of February for the first time, had a chance to really perform in front of the new staff and the new coaches. We told everybody in the locker room that everybody's got a clean slate. Whatever you did a year ago, good, bad, or indifferent, is all gone. In some aspects, what some guys were asked to do will be different than it was a year ago. And I go back to the difference on defense between 2015 and 2016. There were a lot of guys that maybe weren't, you know, making plays in 2015 defensively that all of a sudden showed up in a big way in 2016. And you may see the same thing on our football team between 18 and 19, where a guy that, you know, might have just been a role player or might have been written off, all of a sudden turns out to be a big-time guy for us, because everybody gets a fresh set of eyes on him, gets asked to do different things in a schematically in a different way, and all of a sudden you really have a chance to grow from that.
And you talk so much about the locker room, but in reality, if you're going to win championships, it's going to come from there. The coaching staff, you're limited with hours, and strength and conditioning gets a little bit more, but at the end of the day, it has to come from that locker room.
Every great Hurricane that's come back to talk to our team has mentioned that, that when Miami's great, the locker room polices the football team. And our players, intellectually, they heard that, and I think even as coaches, we intellectually heard that, and we had to put it to the test. So what we've done is we've put some policies in place, kind of changed the way we run our off season, and these are things that are tangible, because everything sounds good, right? But as a coach, if you really want to see the change, you have to make the change. You have to measure the change, right? You don't know if it's real unless you have a chance to measure it. So we put some things in that we can measure, where our players are directly accountable to one another, and if we have certain guys who are not pulling their weight, our best players, our best people will be affected. Because guess what? That's exactly the way it works in the game. The guys that do right, the guys that want to do whatever it takes to win, are always let down by the guys that don't. If you don't expose who those guys are in February, March, April, May, you don't want to find out in September, October, November. It's crippling to find out at that point. So our job as a staff is to put the power in the locker room's hands, to expose the ones who want to be great from the ones who want to be good. And it's totally fine to be good. There's a million places where you can be good, just not UM. Right here, you have to be great. But that's why there's 130 different colleges, you know, and there's so many different ones where being good is acceptable. But Miami, we view ourselves in a different way, and the standard here is different. Now, they don't all come here the same way. Our job is to develop them to see the greatness in them, But at the same time, the guys that ultimately can't hold themselves up to that standard have to find a different place to play.
You took care of a lot of things on offense through recruiting and the transfers. You got a couple of wide receivers, got a tight end, got a couple of linemen, both as a freshman and a grad transfer coming in at tackle. You addressed running back, and probably as important as anything, you really addressed quarterback.
Yeah, we had to, right? We had to create in some way, shape, or form competition. So again, the first way we addressed it was bringing in Dan Enos so he can, you know, what we have on campus is going to be better a year from now. If they just simply listen and do what he says, I think we will see more. They're just going to mature anyway. You know, it's not always just plug in, add instant player, right? These players have to have time to develop, which I think we'll see. But beyond that, we had to create some competition, you know, and we had to get, and I've seen more quarterbacks come in here and throw with wide receivers in the past month than maybe I had in the 3 years I've been here in terms of in the month of January. Keep in mind also, this is, you know, the first off season we've had this so far indoor practice facility. So the opportunity for our guys to come in here, you know, any day of the year, this is really almost like their playground. So, you know, we all knew the benefit of the practice when it was hot out or when we got chased inside for the Lightning. We are learning now in our first true off season in this, it's actually more beneficial now than those days what we first thought.
Yeah, it's not just for bad weather. This is where you get better. Right?
This is where you get better.
Just like a basketball gym. Here's the ball. Go shoot.
Manny, let's clarify position competition or competition amongst the entire team. Competition is not a bad word, and no position group is exempt.
No, there's no doubt. Why I always say the best coach is competition, because you know there's nothing. Look, there's 85 guys on scholarship, and there's no other sport. You think about it, where there's only 11 on the field at a time with 85 watching, right? So that bench, that's the best coach there is, right? That's a powerful motivator because what we have to do as coaches is that whichever 11 are out here, okay, which means there's 74 watching, that those 74 are saying, thank God those 11 are out there, right? And those 11 know when they run out there that those 74 guys believe in me that I'm out there. If we put guys on that field that those 74 wish that they were out there instead, we have a problem because ultimately we lose credibility as coaches if we got guys out on that grass that the team doesn't trust.
Your defense was excellent last year. It's been excellent for 3 years. You added some pieces defensively as well. You probably can never have enough cornerbacks in college football today, but you also really addressed your defensive line.
We did. I don't know that in the first 2 years here we did an outstanding job of recruiting our defensive line. We have some excellent players that came out of those recruiting classes, but not in the quantity. So our numbers were not what they should have been. And that's why bringing a guy like Tito was so important for us. If you look at us at defensive end, we have two juniors coming back and all freshmen. So not a lot of experience there. You see a very similar thing at defensive tackle where we bring back, you know, we lose two of our top three. You know, you have Pat Bethel as a senior and then all sophomores are freshmen. So to bring in some grad transfers like Trayvon Hill from Virginia Tech, because if you've watched us play, you know, I would say Trent Harris led us in sacks 2 years ago and didn't even start. Great teams don't beat you with their first four defensive linemen. They beat you with your second four because our ability to play the attacking style of front play that we like to play, I would say it's like akin to being a full court pressing team in basketball. You can't full court press with the same five guys all the time. So those great full court press teams back in the day, there was always a bunch of guys rolling through there. And so the same thing at the tackle position. So we love the tackles we bring back. We shouldn't have enough of them. So to get a haul, and let's start with the high school guys, speaking of basketball reference, Jared Harrison Hunt, who starts for Christ the King, which is a powerhouse and a historic program in the New York City League, which is as good of a basketball league as there anywhere. And we went and watched him play. And this guy at 6'4", 275 pounds, whatever he is breaking a press. I mean, there's a little, you know, point guard and stuff trying to steal the ball from him. He's dribbling the ball behind his back, through his legs, drives the lane, goes up to the right, switches the hand to the left, and lays it in. That guy can get in the backfield and make plays.
You know, we're a little shorthanded in basketball.
trust me, I know, especially with Coach L's connections and Coach Caputo's connections to the New York League. We brought him over there on their visit, and I'm sure they were watching to see if they could, you know, make a shot or box out. I know they're good for five fouls. you know, when we go watch football players play basketball, we normally want them to foul out. Right. You know, like I don't want the guy that doesn't collect any fouls. But Jason Blissett, who's from right down the street at Poly Prep in Brooklyn, Jalar Holly, who's at Buford High School, powerhouse in Georgia, where we got Jess Simpson from. So to have those guys, and then to be able to have Chigozie coming in from UCLA as sort of our this year's Tito, age, experience, urgency, the understanding of that this is the last go around, and again, a guy that was very highly productive under a scheme very similar to ours, went through a coaching change, was asked to do something very different, became sort of surplus requirements at UCLA, and we see that all the time, very similar to Colbert at Texas and Odenebo at Illinois. And all of a sudden they come here and we think he's got a great chance to have a great year.
We talked about your defensive line, but you did a lot of work also in the secondary, especially at the safety position.
We did. And, you know, one guy that deserves a lot of credit for the month of January he had was Bubba Bolden, who is a transfer that started his career at Southern Cal. And we had been recruiting throughout the fall and really was one of the first big guys. Bubba and KJ Osborne were really the two that jumped in that first week of January that really started the momentum. You know, recruiting is such a momentum game. And Bubba is such an outstanding athlete. Of course, was close friends with Brevin Jordan. Eventually, of course, we got Tate Martell, all three of those guys from the same high school in Las Vegas. But yeah, to have a guy like Bubba, but then a guy like Keontre Smith coming out of Chaminade, kind of all reminded us, hate to always make comparisons, but you can't help but watch him and see some Jaquan Johnson in the way that he plays. And guys that are just pure Canes. And I also want to make a point with, we all know January went great. We had those guys that signed in December, there's some really, really good football players who stuck with Miami when there was a lot of reason not to. And I go back to think about the leadership we have on this football team. Again, talking about Quarterman, McLeod, Pickney, who did the same thing. Stuck with Miami before Mark Richt was hired, stuck with Miami before even I was hired as their position coach, when everyone was telling him, go anywhere else. So again, it's fun to always talk about the guys in the second signing day, but those guys in that first signing day are really a big part of this class as well.
I like those Chaminade Lions.
Yes, they tend to help out.
My alma mater.
Hall of Famer.
That's right. I couldn't see the statue last time I was there, but they must have been polishing it or waxing it.
It's in the back.
Yeah.
When you talk about addressing needs, we had troubles last year at the punter position, and you went out and signed a punter. I mean, and this guy looks like he's going to bring what Miami needs, an attitude at that position.
Yeah, well, it'll scare the football at least into some changing field position. We, you know, everyone knows we were, you know, top five in almost every defensive category, but we were bottom five in the country in average starting field position. We got put on the shortest fields of anybody in the country, and only four teams worse than that. So, punting game is a big part of it, you know, certainly turnovers, which we have to address, but I will say we were aware of that during the season, and our special team staff was able to, you know, locate Lewis and you know, get a chance to create a relationship and ultimately bring him here, and secure him as a big part of our class. So yeah, we obviously have to improve in all three phases of our game, and in special teams, he'll be a big part of our improvement in special teams.
The next big event, I think, will be spring football. What Correct. Do you want that to look like?
Well, every player be better, right? I mean, it's the old coaching adage, right? But if everybody gets 2% better every day, you do that for 15 days, right? You got a chance to be 30% better player than what you were. So you kind of, in the spring, you sort of tear the team apart, you know, into all these, it's, you know, if you went a model of like a car, it's like you take the engine all apart and you polish up all the parts and, you know, make sure everything's running smoothly and get some new equipment if you need it. And then you begin in the summertime into August, you start to rebuild the car. So we're going to tear it apart, obviously, with some new schemes. You know, we have a chance to, you know, install those things where the players in the when they can practice on their own in the summertime and do that type of stuff, that they'll have enough working knowledge of the scheme. But lastly, and maybe most importantly, is to make sure we establish a culture of how we want to play. And again, I'll go back to what we did defensively 3 years ago, that we're going to be, you know, a physical team. We're going to play like what Miami should play. You know, if we can look like Miami Hurricanes, which was our goal really in 2016 defensively, well, that's our goal in 2019 as an entire football team. So what does that mean? It means we're going to be tough, physical, violent. We should be fast. We're going to play fast. And we should look like we're playing with more fun having more fun than anybody else in the country playing football. So ultimately, that's what our spring practice should look like.
at that time also, you'll be searching for the individuals that will take control of this football team. I mean, you're true leaders. Absolutely. You talk about the locker room as a group, but with only seven seniors, and you mentioned four of those from the linebacking core, there's got to be some other people, no matter what class they are, that establish themselves as the leader of this football team.
There's no doubt. Well, when you think about it, the way the college football calendar works, I mean, since the last play of the Pinstripe Bowl until August 1st or whatever day we report, you know, that's an 8-month span or whatever, you have 15 opportunities to practice a football team, to actually do football. You can lift a weight and run around a cone, and but in terms of being with a coach present, to be able to catch a ball or throw a ball or make a block or shed a block or make a tackle, you know, 15 days is not a lot of days to really get that improvement. So it'll be intense, and you will see some guys that will embrace a competition, and that's really what we want. We want to see the best guys come to the forefront.
Well, before we go, fan base is probably going to want to know, the turnover chain comes back, right?
There's going to be a turnover chain at the University of Miami. There's no doubt. The question is going to be, what do we get for the offense?
Okay.
I think we did a survey. I'm pretty sure they like wearing gold chains as well. So we didn't really ask them the question the last 3 years, but I think it'd come back 100%.
We'll just leave it right there, and you know what's going to happen? We're just the Twitter atmosphere, which you're really good at, will blow up now.
Oh, I'm sure we'll be full of suggestions.
Yes.
Can't wait.
Very good. Thanks very much.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Thanks to Manny Diaz, Jim Larinaga, and Katie Meyer for joining us here on Hurricanes Weekly. Tomorrow we'll have the Hurricane Hotline for you. And later today, basketball right here from Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts, Miami and Boston College. We'll tip it off at 6 o'clock. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. And we'll talk to you later for Miami Boston College basketball. Here on Miami Sports Radio, 560 WQAM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.